Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your support. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter at Macroaggression. You can find me on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast. Thanks to our sponsors that make the show work. Legal Shield, man, I'll tell you, a lot of people have been signing up for this. They've been reaching out to me to thank me for turning them on to it. Hey, I agree. I'm glad I found out about it too. My only regret is that I didn't do it sooner. This is a company that's been in business in the United States and Canada for 50 years, has an A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau. They are a consortium of law firms. They have access to a group of law firms across the United States and Canada, and you can have access to an attorney in your area for a very, very reasonable price. How reasonable? About $1 a day. Get you access to an attorney in your area that can help you with a variety of things, contracts, filing documents, creating documents, creating a last will and testament. Do you need that? Do you have that? You got to have that. If you don't have that, you've got to get that. You have to. This is like bare minimum when you're an adult. You got to have these things. You got to have a power of attorney, a financial power of attorney, a medical power of attorney. This is in case you get admitted to, the hospital under some weird, unique circumstance where they're trying to put you on a ventilator and you don't have any sort of authorization to have somebody fill in your place in the event that you're incapacitated. You need to have this. I mean, the chances that you'll need it are pretty slim. You're going to need the will for sure. And most people don't have it. Most people don't want to spend a couple grand to go get it done by an attorney, but this will give you access to it. If you have issues like that, that you need help with, if you run a small business, but you're big enough to have your own business, but not big enough to have your own legal department, they have a small business plan. If you need Identity Shield, they have ID Shield there as well. If you carry a gun, they have documentation that you might need to reflect your gun carrying status. So they've got a lot going on over there. And in fact, I think you should just go to the website and take a look for yourself. See what you think. Don't take my word for it. Go over to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. That's the website specific to the show. It'll show you everything that's offered there. They have not just the legal plan, but a bunch of a la carte items that you can add to this. I think it's something you need to take a look at. You know, if you're getting married, you can get your prenup done there. I'm not trying to put bad vibes on your potential wedding, but I'm just saying the documentation of things like this, you have access to it. It used to be sort of for the rich and to you know that had access to their attorneys. And wasn't it funny? Everything seemed to go their way when they had access to powerful attorneys. Well, now you do too. So take a look, go to the website, see what you think, see if it's right for you, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. Also, EMP Shield, they are building a fantastic protection device that will protect you against lightning, solar flares, multiple EMP strikes. They've got everything that you need. You can go to empshield.com and just take a look around, see what you think. For your home, for your car, for your motorhome, for your boat, for your generators, if you've got them, you can get bundle packages that'll cover you for multiple items. It's many times more efficient than a single-use military design. It can handle up to 40 EMP strikes. It winds up getting fitted to your household circuit breaker with just four wires. It installs like a Type 2 surge protector, and you can do it yourself. There's installation videos on empshield.com on their website. You can find them on YouTube or wherever. So it's relatively easy to do, or you can have an electrician come out and do it for you. I'll tell you, if you are in a position to be proactive about something like this, you will be so thankful that you did it in advance. EMPShield.com is the website. The promo code is MACRO. That will most definitely save you a bunch of money on your way out the door. Well, I think a lot of us have been talking about this. Well, we've been watching the way that things have been moving in America, because this is where I'm watching it, but it's not limited to America. America's kind of driving the bus on this. This is what I would describe as woke capitalism. Okay, Berwick and I talked about capitalism in the Controlled Demolition book because, you know, there are those of us in the world that will say, you can't live under a socialist, you know, administration or regime. It doesn't work well. It sort of peters out after you get past like 300 people. The idea of socialism doesn't work. So they'll say, instead, what you need to incorporate is capitalism, right? It's capitalism. They explain how it works and all these things. And you go, oh, okay, well, that sounds like a good idea. That sounds like way better than socialism. So what? If I'm motivated to work harder or smarter or more efficiently, then I can have bigger gains because of that? Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you want to sit around and wait for the government to give you handouts, you get nothing. You get the bare minimum. That's socialism. So you go, oh, okay, well, I'm more motivated and maybe more educated, and therefore I think I like the idea of capitalism better, so let's go that direction. And that's and people say, well, in America we have capitalism, and you got to get on board with this capital, you know, you got to ditch the socialism idea and get on board with this capitalism, and here in America it'll change your life. Well, I got bad news for those people, because what we have in America is not capitalism. It hasn't been capitalism for a long time, maybe ever. It's just not that. It's some skewed version of it. But when you've got a government as big as the United States government, and you've got trillions of dollars pouring in from when they're not printing it up out of thin air, or they're collecting it in taxes, extorting you, and they're using this to finance certain projects or people over others, certain divisions of the government over others. They institute new ideas that they have. They have these ideas from time to time, the government. They're always dumb, but they throw a ton of money at them because they think that'll make it a dumb idea a better idea if it has a lot of money. That is not the case. So what we have in America is the invisible hand of marketplace, as they talked about, the Scotsman Adam Smith, who talked about the invisible hand of marketplaces that basically balances out when you find that the marketplace will dictate the price. You'll have more demand if you price it according to what the market will pay, as opposed to someone who's too highly priced. It's very obvious. It's econ 101. It's not high level stuff. But we don't even have just the basics of capitalism. It's been hijacked by a lot of people that are intent on pooling as many resources as they can for themselves while leaving nothing left for everybody else. And lately, what we've had, we thought we had a screwed up version of capitalism beforehand, and of course we did, but we ain't seen nothing yet. wait till these woketards get a hold of your version of capitalism and see what they do to, with this, right? So they're of course always screaming about how they want socialism, which is how you can tell that somebody's dull if they're always pushing for socialism, because they clearly don't understand the mechanics of human psychology. Maybe it sounds great on paper, but it, in actuality, it never plays out well.
So real socialism's never been tried, man.
Yeah, it is. It has been tried, and it ends at the barrel of a gun. It just ask all of the, well, you can't because they're all dead, but all the people that are on the receiving end of some socialism in China, in Cambodia, in Germany, in various places where they used guns to enforce socialism, and it ended poorly. It ended in the mass murders of millions and millions and millions of people, because that's what you get with socialism. So those that say, well, that can't be the direction we go, we got to pivot away from socialism, that sounds like a bad idea. Okay, you're right. Let's go to capitalism. Okay, great. Do we have capitalism in America? No, we do not. We have a skewed version of it called crapitalism. But it's now worse because now we have woke crapitalism, which is everything bad about the first version, but now it's just filled with unicorn farts and rainbow glitter. So it's stunning and brave and stupid and everywhere. So let's talk about this, because this idea of wokeism is not accidental. It's not a passing fad as much as I would hope that it would be. It is being engineered to happen. It's coming from the top, right? It's coming from the people that are running this experiment. And what you want to do is you want to let's get to the bottom of it, as we do with stats and figures, and we're going to find out who's in charge of woke capitalism. Who wants this? It's not the people. You know, it's certainly not the people, because it's not going to end well for the majority of people. There will be some in this equation that will do quite well because they will be in control of it all. But others, most of us, you'll be having to sell your gas-powered weed blower, leaf blower, in order to get a battery-powered leaf blower that won't work very well and will fall apart after 2 years. And as you're cursing at it, just remember this episode. And just remember, it didn't have to be this way. It simply did not have to. We did not have to go this woke direction, this green agenda path. If we had stood up for ourselves early on, recognized what was happening, and put an end to it. So that's where we are. We're at a position right now where we have to decide, do we want to go along with this insanity and just allow these maniacs to continue to screw up the economy by creating variables, obstacles, and boogeymen that literally don't exist in order to change behaviors, modify perception, and move money from the way it's always been directed into something new. And of course, when you make a big pivot, a transformational change like this, like moving from what we'll just call it capitalism, even though we all know it's really not capitalism, but this traditional capitalism that America is so-called built on, and move more to this woke version of capitalism, there are going to be some people that will be able to profit handsomely from it. But when you dig into to what it really is, what you'll find is that it's anchored in a lie. In fact, if you want to get to the real nuts and bolts of it, it was started by the United Nations. We'll get to that in a little bit. In fact, and I'm going to talk about some of the ways that they've used these massive pension funds and investment vehicles to drive forward ESG, environmental, social, and governance types of policies into the mainstream when they should rightly be laughed out of existence. But, so let's talk about this. So where would you start if you wanted to create and implement a social credit system, right? China's got it. They've got it. They've got all their... I think it's city by city, but people are being controlled because of their social credit system. It's a tall order, of course, to get 1.5 billion Chinese people to participate in this. And let's use America as an example, 340 million, considerably smaller than China, but we have a personality trait that the Chinese don't share, which is that we're extremely distrustful of a lot of policies that the government puts forth. I mean, that's the establishment of America, is to let, you know, trust but verify, I guess, right? Like be a little bit distrusting of your government. In China, the government runs everything. The people bow down. They don't even dream of getting out of line because they know what will happen to them. But Americans are different. So are the methods in which you would push everybody into America have to be different as well. And they most certainly are. So rather than doing a bottom-up approach to the social credit system like China has done, America has decided to go a different direction, really more top-down. And when I say top-down, I don't mean necessarily the government at the top, but rather their partners, the corporations. So the corporations are the ones that are really driving this push for ESG, environmental, social, governance. And part of the push for them to get involved in it is less about their environmental footprint, but more about it's easier to control the corporations and get them on board if you're the American government being overseen by, say, the United Nations, and you want to get America on board with a social credit system. Start with the corporations first. Start with ESG first. Start with manipulating and modifying those that you have access to, the CEOs, through the World Economic Forum, through the United Nations, through the Aspen Institute, through these NGOs and government think tanks. You get access to the high-ranking decision makers of all these corporations. If you can get them on board and modify their behavior, then that will trickle down to the companies that they run, to the investment funds that they run. It will modify behavior from the corporations down through the ranks and eventually to the people itself. So that's where we started. You can give these corporations freebies. You can give them tax credits. You can give them access to pools of money for getting on board with the ESG, and they have. So you can incentivize the corporations in a way to kickstart this social credit system. Now, you might see ESG scores for corporations and not tie them directly to a social credit score for you, but I assure you it's coming. I'm not speculating that it's coming this direction. I've read the instruction manual. I know it's coming this direction. This is how they're doing it. They're going after the corporations first, and they want to they want to convince companies to become socially conscious, right? And if you are, or if you identify, all you have to do is identify these days. I identify as socially conscious. You can get money from the Biden administration. I wonder if you knew that. They have access to investment capital, and they have federal tax credits available for you. Isn't that weird? Here you are trying to save the world, and they'll pay you and incentivize you to do it. Isn't that funny? Why? I wonder why the government is so interested in you all of a sudden changing the way you run your corporations, and instead of prioritizing shareholder value, now all of a sudden you've turned into some liberal commie who wants to remake the world in some with some sort of political agenda. Isn't that strange? These corporations are acting against their own self-interest. Why would they do that? Well, they're being incentivized to do that. They're being told that they can't fail, that the government will step in, that they have access to funds that other companies don't have access to. They have access to tax credits that others don't have too. So if you're the United Nations pushing this agenda, you're going to want to get the big corporations in first and have them behave differently, modify their behavior. And once that is done, then they'll go after the general public. So How do you do that? Well, listen, the idea that all these corporations out there are independent of one another is a fallacy. They're not. They are connected to each other in more ways than you might think. There's something known as interlocking boards of directors, and what that means is that you can sit on multiple boards of directors. You can be a person that is a high-ranking member of one corporation and sit on the board of directors for corporations that are completely different. You can be running General Mills and sit on the board of Chevron. And you go, well, making cereal, selling oil, what does that have to do with each other? Well, it has to do with interlocking boards of directors. It has to do with having a little bit, having everybody sitting on each other's boards. Everybody, this is like the peer review process in academia, right? You're reviewing each other's work. You're propping up each other. You're interlocking your values are being exported to some other corporation. You're going to sit on somebody else's board and bring along with you the way that you feel things should be done. And this has led to a homogenization of these corporations. When you need to get the word out and change the direction that business is done, this is how you would do it. So you don't have to get every single person at every single organization, corporation, to get on board with this. You just need to get the decision makers. And where are they? They're on the boards of directors. And that's where you get them. So this is how we should watch the following 10 years proceed. You're going to see this happen at the highest levels of these corporations. You're going to start to see these woke ideas creep in. You're already seeing them. You're already seeing it. You're seeing pushback on the retail level by consumers, but it doesn't really matter because you can sink Bud Light all you want. As long as InBev Anheuser-Busch has access to capital for green agendas, they can make up the loss in their shareholder value over the Dylan Mulvaney situation because they can just get themselves bailed out and borrow more money. Now, of course, the irony in all of this is that had they not done anything, they would need access to this capital. But by getting woke and going broke, so to speak, now they need the capital that they were incentivized to. They're incentivized to get involved in the middle of this stuff and create, sign a deal with Dylan Mulvaney and burn the bridge of your existing customers. Watch your sales volume of Bud Light drop by 30% and then go, geez, I mean, the money's drying up. Where do we get the money? Well, we've got money for you over here. Well, thanks a lot, I guess. I mean, you guys are the ones that talked us into coming out and doing all these weird deals with these influencers that are completely antithetical to our customer base. And now you offer us money? Well, because it's not about money. It's part of an agenda. It's a much larger agenda. So but then again, I would like for us to maybe look at this from a different angle too. And this is a little conspiratorial, but go with me here on this for a little bit. If the carrot of tax breaks and free money doesn't work, and if your board of directors, for some reason, won't play ball, it could be time for the stick. What do you suppose the stick method is? If the carrot is tax breaks, free money, then the stick is, I don't know, Jeffrey Epstein? I mean, hear me out on this. The Venn diagram of Jeffrey Epstein and ESG is interesting. Because the people rigging the system towards the woke ESG nonsense are also the same people that have been interacting and perhaps being blackmailed by Jeffrey Epstein over the years, right? I mean, he's traveling in the same circles. Let me remind you who was on Jeffrey Epstein's calendar. And then you tell me if you think there might be overlap between getting these guys on board with the ESG initiative and making sure that if they don't get on board, Jeffrey Epstein assists them in getting on board. Here's who is on his calendar. Larry Fink, BlackRock, Jess Staley, Barclays, Larry Summers, Treasury, Harvard, William Burns, the CIA, Reid Hoffman, LinkedIn. A lot of woke ideology happening on LinkedIn. Bill Gates, he's in charge of the fake meat industry. That's some ESG stuff right there. British royal family. Prince Andrew, We're gonna talk more about this at the end of the show, about the British royal family's role in ESG investing. Let me just tell you, do not underestimate the amount of influence that the royal family has on ESG. Well, we've got Bill Clinton involved. The Clinton Foundation is pushing ESG. We've got Larry Page and Sergey Brin from Google. You can rig the algorithm so that everything comes up a little ESG. We've got Thomas Pritzker, Hyatt CEO. We've got Mort Zuckerman from the media. We've got Mike Ovitz from Disney, who also used to be an agent. We've got Noam Chomsky from MIT in the media. We've got Team Zionism there. I mean, we just do. Again, political designation, not a religion. So what if, among all of his other talents, air quotes, Jeffrey Epstein was also in charge of making sure that these high-level CEOs, these hedge fund managers, these tech gurus all got on board with ESG, and if they didn't, secrets would be revealed. It's a reasonable assumption, given that these people are the decision makers. I mean, Larry Fink at BlackRock is the guy. He's Mr. ESG. His relationship with Epstein is very well known. Now, look, it's fair to say that maybe these guys didn't need any pushing to get into the ESG scam. Maybe the idea of Epstein as a guy to blackmail them into it would be unnecessary or even redundant, not needed, because these guys already went for the carrot and didn't need the stick. But Epstein was a Swiss Army knife. You could use him for everything, you know, until you couldn't. But let's pivot, because we're not going to move too far away from Epstein. We're going to still be Epstein adjacent here. And this is something that happened recently at a Berkshire Hathaway board of director meeting. Now, Berkshire Hathaway is a investment vehicle. It used to be a standalone company that was bought by Warren Buffett and his partner, Charlie Munger. These guys are too fucking old to be running things anymore. They're damn near, I mean, Charlie Munger has got to be 120 years old at this point. He looks like the Crypt Keeper. These guys are old school. They've been doing things their way for a very long time, and nobody's ever challenged them on it because they've got a ton of money and they fly under the radar in Omaha, and they don't really bother anybody, allegedly. But when you dig into what this company and the groups, you know, the ideology behind somebody like Warren Buffett, who runs Berkshire Hathaway, it's worth an examination into who this guy is, because he pretends to be this lovable grandfather type who just can't stop eating McDonald's, drinking Coca-Cola, and eating at Dairy Queen, you know, because he owns Dairy Queen. That this has always been the sort of, oh, he lives in the same house, he's lived in forever, he's a billionaire, but he doesn't act like a billionaire and all these things. Yeah, right. This is all nonsense. This is all window dressing. This is all buying public relations. This is what Jeffrey Epstein wished he could do, was to buy this sort of influence. But Bill Gates can. And let's talk about the role of Bill Gates with Warren Buffett, because the a guy named Peter Flaherty, chairman of the National Legal and Policy Center, NLPC, stood to offer a proposal to separate the roles of Berkshire Hathaway's CEO and chairman so that the company, quote, would be less identified with Mr. Buffett's personal political activities. Now, why should this matter? Well, let me tell you. If you saw the video, then you know where I'm going with this. But I'm going to read the speech that this man, Peter Flaherty, gave at the Berkshire Hathaway annual shareholders meeting. He is a shareholder. He was there to speak. He had 3 minutes in front of a microphone to speak, and they did not like what he had to say. Quote, this is Peter Flaherty talking to the general public in this, well, the shareholders in this gigantic room, But up at the front, it's Charlie Munger, it's Warren Buffett, and it's the C-level executives of Berkshire Hathaway. He's talking about Warren Buffett's role in social investing. Quote, he's donated tens of billions to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. As Bill Gates explained when the couple was still together, quote, although the foundation bears our name, basically half our resources have come from Warren Buffett, $31 billion to be precise. He continues, if woke culture is a disease, then philanthropy is the virus. The Gates Foundation bankrolls the teaching of critical race theory around the country, including that math is inherently racist. The Gates Foundation offers a gender identity toolbox, which asserts that gender is the result of, quote, socially and culturally constructed ideas. He continues, this is a lie. Gender is not a cultural construct. It is a genetic and biological fact. At this point, they interrupt him. But he appeals to Buffett, who allows him to continue. He says, hey, what's going on? What do you do? But there's a hubbub around the microphone. The security guards are coming over. People are starting to get upset. And he's like, whoa, hang on a second. I'm a shareholder. I'm entitled to speak. And Buffett says, you've got 3 minutes. You can't go past your 3 minutes. He says, I'm not going to. Fine. He continues. Peter Flaherty continues in this diatribe. We know how much Bill Gates cares about children. He met and traveled with Jeffrey Epstein many times after Epstein was convicted of sex crimes. Now, in the audience, you hear this. Oh, like everybody gets, how dare you? How dare you bring Bill Gates up at this Berkshire Hathaway meeting? Well, hey, man, Berkshire Hathaway's founder gave Bill Gates $31 billion. It's relevant. Okay. So the audience is all in a tizzy because this guy had the audacity to, you know, bring facts to one of these meetings. So he continues. The Gates Foundation had a huge influence over the COVID response fiasco. Bill Gates defended China's COVID policy and still discounts the possibility that the virus originated from a lab, even though U.S. intelligence agencies disagree. The Gates Foundation may be the largest single donor to the dark money machine known as Arabella Associates. It funds causes like defunding the police that are making American cities unlivable. Money goes to groups conducting ... The microphone is turned off. They cut his microphone in the middle of his speech, which is a dirty tactic, but not a new one. But it gets worse. They then had him escorted out of the building and arrested. Are you starting to get the point here? Are you starting to figure out what we're up against? You can't even talk about the facts about what these guys are doing without them calling the police and having you arrested for trespassing at a shareholder meeting that you're entitled to be at because you're a shareholder. This guy didn't infiltrate it. He didn't go Alex Jones at Bohemian Grove or Dan Dix at Bilderberg or anything like that, which is great, by the way. If you did those things, it'd be fine if you did, but he didn't. He went to the shareholder meeting because he's a shareholder. And he runs an organization called National Legal and Policy Center. And based on his speech that he gave, he was correct in his entire assessment. There wasn't anything about his speech that was defamatory. It was unfortunate for Warren Buffett, who has to sit up there and be reminded that his friend Bill Gates is a despicable human being, that he gave half the money for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came from Warren Buffett. So he has to hear that, but he doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to hear the truth. He wants that guy arrested. So the guy got arrested. You should see the guy's mugshot too. Big, huge smile. That's how you do it, man. Good for you. Peter Flaherty, if you're out there, reach out. I want to talk to you, my man. But this is what I'm talking about. You have to be careful how this money is being spent, because Warren Buffett doesn't need $150 billion. He's got it, or he's worth it, but he doesn't need it. He's not going to take it to the grave. He's got a foot in the grave already. He doesn't need it. That money can be used for other things. It can be used for good. It could be used to continue the ideological work that Bill Gates is doing. So Warren Buffett believes that it is best for humanity that he give his money to Bill Gates, who is a known eugenicist, who has been busted putting sterilants in the vaccines through his work with the World Health Organization. He's been kicked out of India with Gavi for giving 496,000 kids polio with his oral polio vaccine, for killing thousands of kids there as well, and then compensating the parents with the bare minimum, which was $1,000 per child that you murder with this vaccine that's not a vaccine. So this is Bill Gates. And by default, or by reflection, this is Warren Buffett. So of course, you have to be careful with these guys. I mean, it's trespassing today. It's trunk of a car shot in the back of the head tomorrow. And if you think that they wouldn't do that, they do that in the pharmaceutical industry that's worth $500 billion, and ESG is going to be 100 times bigger than that. So listen, this is the direction. Let's talk about ESG for a minute. Environmental, social, and governance. This is it. This is woke capitalism, woke crapitalism. This is when you incentivize CEOs, pension fund managers, hedge fund managers, whoever, anybody that manages large amounts of money, and you normally they're incentivized maximize shareholder value. Don't be evil, you know, if you can help it, but that's step one, maximize shareholder value. Step two, don't be evil unless, you know, you have to do number one. You know, it's always about making money. But then ESG came around and they said, actually, you have to be good to the world now. Well, these CEOs didn't get to where they are by being good. Okay. They got there by being cutthroat. This is incompatible with their ideology. It's incompatible with their normally stated goal, which is maximizing shareholder value. Now, again, if you can maximize shareholder value while doing the right thing, while not harming the environment, I'm all for it. But that's not what's happening here. These people are being instructed to do things in a much different way, up to the point where in Florida, in the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis barred investment into ESG with public money. He said, we in Florida don't want Florida's public money going into any ESG funds. And the reason is because we don't want to lose our money. Those funds are prioritizing the wrong things. You're prioritizing how diverse your board of directors is, which may or may not be a good thing. But if you're diversifying the color of your board of directors simply because you get an extra gold star from the ESG police, but at the same time, you're putting the wrong people in your board of directors, you're not helping your corporation. You're just getting a gold star for being woke, but you're not running your corporation the correct way. But that's the problem, is that they're incentivizing these people. So State Street came out and said, quote, climate change posed a systemic risk to companies they were investing in. No, that's a lie. For State Street to come out and say that climate change was posing a systemic risk to companies that they were investing in, so therefore they had to get really clear about helping to fight climate change, that's a lie. Do you know who Dan Pena is? Have you heard that name before? He is a brutally honest, extremely foul-mouthed, super rich, aggressive, humongous asshole. You'll love him. He's great, man. go find some Dan Pena clips, okay? You can find him on London Real a lot, talking to the guys over there. Dan Pena did a, see if you want to find a, there's a video of him. And you can probably find it by searching Dan Pena talks high-rise condo investing Florida. You could just put in those keywords and you'll find it. He's on a panel and he takes a question from the audience, and it's an Australian woman. And she's very, and if you know who Dan Pena is, you know, he's just ready to bite your head off immediately. And this lady is trying to make him feel sorry for not caring about climate change. And Dan Pena, first of all, he calls her a fucking retarded broad and tells her to sit down, which is, you know, which is great. I mean, it's just hilarious to watch the way he has zero, he has zero tact at all. You know, he just sit the fuck down, you dumb bitch. I mean, he just goes off on her, right? So immediately it goes from like, she has a question to it goes to 11 right away. After you get past that part, listen to what he says. Because he's telling you the truth about this. He says, I've been investing in real estate for 40 years. And he said, we've got Florida high-rise condo buildings getting built all the time. Never in my 40 years of investing in these portfolios, these properties, these groups, never in my 40 years have I ever seen one single sentence that said, in the event of climate change and the seas rise, your investment turns into fuck all, is what he calls it. Never seen it. He said, now, if there was a chance that this investment would turn to fuck all because the seas were rising, it would be in that prospectus. And it's not in there. It's not in that one. It's not in the next one. It's not in any of them because it's not an actual risk, because it's not actually real. That's it. It's not a real thing. So when State Street comes out and says climate change posed a systemic risk to companies they were investing in, they are lying, because climate change is fake. Pollution is real. And pollution takes a variety of different forms. And it's disgusting, and we got to clean it up, and we've got to be better with this planet and all those things. So I'm not some just keep polluting this planet, who gives a shit type of guy. I love for things to be clean and organized and healthy and all of that. And I want the planet to be that way as well. And if I thought that there was a way to do it by calling it climate change and changing our behavior, and that would magically make it all go away, I'd be in favor of it. But it's not. It's fake. Climate change is fake. But it is. But what's real about it is the behavior. Okay, so when State Street comes out and talks about how climate change poses a risk to the companies, they're not being upfront. But that shouldn't be a surprise, because we're going to get into a little bit about how these firms scored. Okay, it's not good. There's a term called greenwashing. Have you heard that? That is when corporations try to slap a coat of, you know, proverbial green paint all over themselves so that they look like they're a green company, green meaning environmentally friendly in this case. They look like they're an environmentally friendly company, but it's just a coat of paint. You know, it's not like when you dig into the core, what you find is that they don't give a shit about that stuff. So there's a concept called greenwashing. It's basically woke capital virtue signaling. Right. It's just corporations that say, hey, we're super woke and we care about the environment. And then you go, well, why is your factory dumping all this toxic waste in the river? And they go, oh, don't look at that. You know, we can't talk to you about that. Or you're Warren Buffett and you tell the police to haul the guy away and arrest him for trespassing when you start to expose the truth. So you've got this ESG component, right? So I'm going to read this. There's a 40-page report from the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, God, titled Putting Politics Over Pensions, okay? So Putting Politics Over Pensions. This is to rank the funds that may or may not have or allow woke ideology to influence their decision-making and capital allocation. Right. So what they did is this. They said, let's take a look. Let's do this report and let's find out where these companies actually stack up, and let's give them a letter grade, A being excellent, F being terrible. And when I say A for excellent, I don't mean that they're woke. I mean A excellent, they're not woke. They're companies that figured out that this is suicide, economic suicide for a corporation to put these to all of a sudden midstream change your priorities and instead of maximizing shareholder value, you've got to save the whales. All of a sudden you have to do that. Some corporations fully embraced it. Some went, I don't think this is a good idea. Like, if we're talking about doing what's right for our shareholders, which I would assume includes them too, right? If you're the CEO of a large hedge fund, you probably have some stake in that hedge fund doing well, right? You get a paycheck, you probably get dividend split as well. So you have a vested interest in making this work well. So somebody has some sanity somewhere in the room, right? And so this group, this committee to unleash prosperity, took a look and they said, well, let's just get into it. Let's examine all these big ones. So they looked at like radical left-wing activism, including things like banning plastics, diversity hiring quotas, oil and gas divestment, meaning if you were a hedge fund or a pension fund or somebody that managed large pools of money, if all of a sudden in the last 3 years you sold all your Chevron stock because Chevron bad, and then you took all that money and instead bought you invested it in somebody in a company that was very high on they had the right number of Eskimo transgendered midgets on the board of directors, and you thought that was a better strategy. So you took all your money from oil and gas, which, you know, represents fossil fuels, represents 80% of the energy used in the United States. And you said, yeah, 80% is good and all, but what is their record with transsexual midgets running the board of directors? How are they on that? They're pretty weak. Let's move all of our money out. So if you did that, if you focused on things like the companies that were banning plastic straws or diversity hires or oil and gas divestment or a push towards net zero emissions, which will never happen, or, you know, any of this stuff, they ranked you. This group took a look and they were watching what you did with your money. They watched what stocks you sold, what stocks you bought. They watched everything. They took a deep dive. They looked at the environmental, social, and governance ideas that were either accepted or rejected when it came to investing. So instead of focusing on shareholder value maximization, that was, no longer a priority for some of these firms. They focused on something else. So let's get into that. Let's get into the scores that these corporations. You're going to recognize the names too, and I'm going to tell you right off the bat, one of them is going to be a surprise in the positive direction. Okay, let's start with the best firms. These are the best ones with regard to ESG. And when I say best, again, this means the least woke companies out there. The ones that didn't fall into the diversity, equity, inclusion trap. So some of them you'll recognize, some of them you won't recognize. Receiving a score of an A, the highest score you can get, a company called Dimensional. Okay. I had never heard of Dimensional before. And also receiving an A, Fidelity. Okay. Also receiving an A, T. Rowe Price. You go, okay, I know these names. I might not have money with them, but I recognize the name. Here's the surprise. Here's the surprise corporation that got an A. Vanguard. Oh, did you know that? Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street run this world. Okay. They run it. We know it. They've got all the money. They're the ones that own chunks of all of these media companies and other corporations, international, multinational corporations. If you want to talk about an interlocking board of directors, like Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street, they know everybody. Vanguard got an A on this one. So credit where credit is due. I'm not trying to say that Vanguard is some altruistic company that's, you know, going to give you a big hug. But I will say this, if you've got your money invested with Vanguard, at least they give a fuck about it. At least they're not trying to pool it all into the parking lot and light it on fire like the rest of these firms are. Let's move on. Nobody got a B. There were no Bs. Next on this, C. Again, you're going to find some surprises on this list too. C. Alliance Bernstein. Never heard of them. AXA Equitable Life. That's AXA. AXA Equitable Life. They got a C. Sun America. They got a C. JP Morgan Chase. They got a C. This one will be a surprise to get a C. BlackRock. Now, BlackRock is leading the ESG charge, but even they haven't gone full woke yet. They received a C on this list, okay? They were not the worst. They weren't the best, but they most definitely weren't the worst. In fact, they were in like the top third, which is a little bit surprising. I was admittedly surprised by this. Moving on, these are the funds that got a D grade, which means you're now in a situation where these corporations are making decisions with your money that you trust them to invest for you. If you're you've got your money in an account with them or whatever, or you've bought their you've bought their financial products in the form of you bought into a fund that they manage, or you've got something related to them. Okay. D, these are D grades. Geode, G-E-O-D-E. Never heard of them. BNY Mellon, Goldman Sachs, D. State Street. Okay. So now we've got Vanguard as an A. We've got BlackRock as a C, and we've got State Street as a D. So we're not as bad off as we maybe thought. I would have assumed, frankly, I'll be honest with you, I would have assumed all three of these got Fs. And they didn't. They didn't. To be fair, this group gave State Street a D. Okay. TIAA Cref, D. PGIM, D. Jennison Associates, D. Wellington, Franklin Templeton, Capital Group, Charles Schwab, Invesco, SEI, and RBC. All of these firms got a D rating. That ain't good. They're managing your money, but it gets worse. Here are the groups that received an F rating. Voya Investment Management, Invesco Advisors, which is great because I'm in Denver and Mile High Stadium, which is the stadium where the Broncos play, is called Invesco Field. So Invesco got an F. Awesome. Columbia Threadneedle, F. Allspring Global, Thrivent, UBS, American Century, MFS. And by the way, you've got money with any of these groups, get it out. Like, get it out and get it into something else immediately. Not licensed to give financial advice. I'm just saying these guys get Fs for a reason. Pro Fund Advisors, Guggenheim, First Trust Advisors. All of these got Fs. There's another category. They had to make another category for the following group. These groups got F minuses. Invesco Perpetual Select Trust. Fucking Invesco again. F minus. Deutsche Bank. F minus. Swiss Conto. Northern Trust. Storebrand Asset Management and ranking dead last on the list, BNP Paribas, which is a French bank. If you have money with any of these groups that got D's, F's, or F minuses, Your money is being used in a way that is inconsistent with maximizing your growth of it. So what are you going to do? You know, what do you want to do about it? I'm just saying that these are the people that are doing it. And this is what we've got. So we've got the big three: BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. So again, back to Vanguard getting an A. Here's part of the reason why Vanguard got an A. They pulled out of the $56 trillion net zero asset managers initiative. So there's a $59 trillion group initiative called Net Zero Asset Managers, and they want all the asset managers of these funds to get on board with net zero. They're talking about carbon emissions to net zero. You're never going to get carbon emissions to net zero. And even if you did, it would come with turning the world upside down, which of course is what they want. They want you to turn the world upside down. And all of this stuff doesn't matter at all anyway, even if you were able to do it, because more than 99% of all carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere comes from natural processes like volcanoes and things like that. So you're not even going to get, even if you got to net zero, it would be on like a fraction of 1% of the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And by the way, if you look at some of the scientists that aren't bought off, they will tell you that we're actually at a carbon dioxide low, according to history. So none of it makes any sense. It's not about the environment. It's about reimagining society so that they can put the final nail in the coffin and create a world government. And again, not my speculation. Go grab the book, The Limits to Growth by the Club of Rome, written in 1971. You can read all about it. They lay out the plan for how they're going to do it, what they're going to call it, and what they're going to use the money for. The funding mechanism for the New World Order, for the world government. They say it in there. Okay, so that's what this is about. But this $59 trillion net zero asset managers initiative is part of a much bigger group. I mean, it's hard to imagine when you're talking about $59 trillion being just part of a group, but it is actually part of a much larger group called, it's the UN-affiliated Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero doesn't really, you'd think they'd have a better acronym for it. Like something like carbon or, you know, like it would spell out carbon. It doesn't do it on this, but this is, as I mentioned, UN affiliated. This is a group that has $150 trillion to spend on this. Okay. So this is where we're going. This is where things are headed. This is, I want to read you a quote from the CEO of Vanguard, Tim Buckley. Quote, our research indicates that ESG investing does not have any advantage over broad-based investing. He's right. Not only does it not have any advantage, I would suggest it has multiple disadvantages. Like you're worrying about stuff that's not a problem. So let's go on. So ESG is, basically, what ESG is focusing on is climate change. Think of it from a corporation standpoint. You get hired by a corporation and you're going to go to work for them. And what's the focus here? Well, the focus here at this corporation is making the customer happy. And we make these widgets and we want to make them better than our competitors. And we want to make them cheaper and maybe even sell them cheaper and sell them to more people. And that's what we want to do. And you go, oh, okay, I can get on board with that. That's logical and it makes sense. Okay, you're a company that wants to stay in business for a long time, so you want to treat your customers well, make a great product, sell a lot of those products, and do it for make the maximum amount of profits from this that you can without, you know, hurting yourself, screwing yourself over in the process. Oh, and by the way, you have to keep an eye on the competitors that are all trying to do the exact same thing, and you have to out-strategize them, and you have to come up with a better idea, and that's how we're going to run this corporation. No. All of that makes sense. But what ESG is doing is ESG is saying, take all those concepts and throw them out the window. This is what we want you to focus on. We want you to focus on climate change, racism, sexism, activism, and social engineering. And basically anything except creating shareholder value. We don't care about that anymore. How big of an activist are you? We want to know. We want to measure it. We want to give you a score for it. Did you have Dylan Mulvaney on your beer can lately? You did. We're going to give you a high score. Oh, thank you for giving me a high score. The general public is giving me an F- just like BNP Paribas. Anheuser-Busch is getting an F minus from the consumers. You know, the consumers, the ones with the money that buy your products or don't. So they're being asked to prioritize activism at the expense of prioritizing dollars and cents. But really, really, if we're going to get down to the core and get honest about what this is, ESG is the setup for carbon taxes. This is the, they're laying the foundation. This is why they don't mind if they lose in the short term, because the long-term gain is a pie that is so big you can't even comprehend it. And that's carbon taxes. And that's what they want a piece of. So they're willing to shoot themselves in the foot or in the dick with the Dylan Mulvaney situations, as long as they keep that ESG score high enough, because they will be rewarded as being part of the group that is allowed to partake in carbon taxes. And if you're a good corporation that does what you're told, maybe carbon tax credits, so that you don't have to worry about that. But your competitor that refused to do the Dylan Mulvaney thing, well, we're going to hammer them with carbon taxes. We won't give them any credits. This is the government putting the thumb on the invisible market, invisible hand of marketplaces, right? So this is what we're up against. Once they can identify and quantify your individual usage, then they will limit it and impose carbon taxes on everybody. Don't believe me? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero that I just talked about, that I said had $150 trillion. $150 trillion. Well, for those of you that were hoping that your mind would be set at ease when I explain who is chairing this whole thing, well, I've got some bad news for you, because it is being chaired by deep state globalist scumbag Mark Carney. Anybody that knows anything about Mark Carney knows he is a dangerous individual who is not to be trusted. He is team globalist. He is the UN special envoy on climate action and finance. He is involved in getting net zero emissions to zero by 2025, and also enacting the Paris Climate Accord, which Trump rightly pulled us out of. This group that is chaired by Mark Carney, Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, 160 firms, currently $70 trillion in assets these companies have. They are involved in the UN Race to Zero, which I assume means zero people. Oh, zero carbon. Whatever. What's the difference, right? Finance initiatives, which is code for free fucking money, I guess. And Net Zero Banking Alliance. So the Net Zero Banking Alliance is what we need to keep our eyes on. It's 43 international banks. It's hosted by the United Nations Environmental Program Finance Initiative, and co-launched by the finance. This is what I said. I would get to this in a second. The Net Zero Banking Alliance has been co-launched by a group called the Financial Services Task Force of the Prince of Wales Sustainable Markets Initiative. So Prince William is running the climate grift now. They didn't go and tell you. They didn't make a big announcement about that. But it's been happening sort of on the down low for a while. The Crown in England, who was deeply involved with all aspects of world government, as we know, partnering with the United Nations. The Crown is taking the lead on this one. They've got Prince William running the climate grift, and soon to be king of all one sixth of all the land around the world too. I mean, we know Charles isn't in his little sausage Vienna sausage fingers isn't going to last much longer. He doesn't look well. But on top of that, they'll probably keep him in for a decade, and then they'll switch him out with Prince William. And Prince William will be sold as a cool guy in the public. You know, hey, he's not Harry. Hey, at least he's not Harry, right? And he never had ties to Jimmy Savile or that we know of, right? Well, I mean, except that Jimmy Savile negotiated the breakup between Charles and Diana. But never mind that, right? Prince William will be held out as being above reproach. But it'll all be a gigantic act because he's going to be in charge of the climate initiative, right? So U.S. Special Envoy for Climate, John Kerry, he is in on it, and he is working on climate financing for decarbonization to, quote, tackle the climate crisis. But again, there is no climate crisis. None of this stuff is real. This is all fake. There's no climate crisis. There's a pollution crisis, to be clear. It's disgusting. But there's not too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's another scam. It's like COVID, where trust the science. We have scientists. They all say you have to be scared of this virus with a 99.98% survivability rate. Don't look at those numbers. Don't look at the numbers of the historical numbers of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Don't look at any of those. Those are fake numbers. Those are white supremacist numbers. White supremacist doctors came up with those climate numbers. I'm sure of it. I'm just sure of it, right? Anything that goes against the narrative is disinformation, or it's misinformation, or it's white supremacy, or it's whatever anti-Semitism, it's whatever label they can put on it to make it appear radioactive, to keep you away from it. Not because it is radioactive, not because these figures are white supremacy, but because they're the truth. And the last thing they want you to do is dig around into the numbers that are the actual truth, because then what you will recognize is that what they're telling you are just a bunch of lies. I want to finish with this. This is just so you know who you know Mark Carney is. I want to read his quote. This is UN Special Envoy on Climate Finance, Mark Carney. Quote, "This is the breakthrough in mainstreaming climate finance the world needs. I welcome the leadership of the Financial Services Task Force and other global banks for their new commitment to net zero and for joining forces with GFANZ, that's Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, the gold standard for net zero commitments in the financial sector. Most fundamentally, GFANZ will act as the strategic forum to ensure the financial system works together to broaden, deepen, and accelerate the transition to a net zero economy." Mark Carney, UN banker scumbag extraordinaire, has organized 43 international banks that currently have $70 trillion in assets. And he's telling them that he's going to get them access to $150 trillion additional dollars so that they can work together to accelerate the transition to a net zero economy. So basically, they've got all the money in the world. But again, this is an investment on their behalf. They have to think of it. They're bankers. They're money people. They understand money, and they understand investments. $150 trillion sounds like a lot of money, which it is. But when you are creating the framework of a carbon tax that will go on forever, that will generate trillions of dollars a year, every year, and that money will be used as the funding mechanism to continue to keep this apparatus in place, it's game over. If they allow this to get in, they will have all the money in the world for a very long period of time. And of course, it is a zero-sum game too. So the money that they extract out of the system is money that you'll never have access to. So you're going to have to pay a carbon tax in the future if these guys get their way. And the explanation for why we have to pay that carbon tax has to do with diversity, inclusion, and equity. And nobody seems to understand why that's important. The truth is, it's not important. It doesn't matter what the pretext is. If they can convince all these corporations and incentivize them, Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch loses, $600 million in market cap from their Dylan Mulvaney debacle, who cares? They just mentioned they have $150 trillion to spread around. Who gives a shit? The agenda is worth it to them. So this is where we're going. You know, if they were really serious about ESG, environmental pollution and things like that, what about the U.S. military? Why isn't the U.S. military covered by this, by the Paris Climate Accords? What about China? Why isn't China is the largest polluter? Why isn't China part of that? Because they said they're not participating in this. It's not about saving the world. It's about behavior modification. And the sooner the general public figures that out, the better off they'll be. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right this second of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast, the website, the octopus of globalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.